I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. 3 weeks ago, our friends at the BC and Yukon Book Prizes revealed their 2020 shortlist honoring books published in 2019. The finalists in 8 categories for fiction, nonfiction, poetry, children's literature reflect the region as it acknowledges the craft and art of publishing, writing, and art itself. An April date for the gala was set, and just as tickets for the dinner were to be sold, the entire world was consumed by the coronavirus. Events and gatherings have been canceled due to precautions over COVID-19, but the date for the 36th annual BC and Yukon Book Prizes is set for Saturday, the 19th of September, at the Pan Pacific Hotel here in Vancouver. The ceremony will be hosted by CBC Radio's indomitable Sheila Rogers. Joining me now is the executive director of the BC and Yukon Book Prizes, Sean Cranberry. I'll get Sean to tell us about the challenges of the last few weeks, as well as the events that have been postponed, a number of terrific events in the community and throughout the region highlighting the authors and their books. Sean was on in December, and we talked at length about my experience last year as a juror. We'll talk about the process that jurors are now in the midst of as they conduct their deliberations. I'll also get Sean, an old bookseller, to tell us about how we might get some or all of these finalists as we are confined into isolation by COVID. Visit bcyukonbookprizes.com for more information, as well as a list of these distinguished finalists. At Sean Cranberry is the Twitter handle. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Sean Cranberry. Mr. Cranberry, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Joe. How you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm all right. I'm making do. How are you doing during the this unprecedented time?
I think that's what we're all doing. We're making do. We're trying to find things that will interest us or fill our time.
Yeah.
A great way, and this is I mentioned this in the introduction. I mean, you're an old bookseller.
Yeah.
A great way, if we're looking for books to read, is to take the list of the shortlisted authors, mm-hmm. and start there.
Yeah, I agree. One of our prime jobs is to highlight all the books that are on the shortlist and to get them out there and let people know that these are great books by authors from BC or Yukon. And, there's so much going on right now in terms of bookstores, mm-hmm. really going above and beyond in terms of trying to stay open, trying to develop ways of getting books into people's hands, whether that's delivery or various other COVID-related strategies for getting people into the shop or whatever. That list of 37 books all total,
yeah.
is a great window into some of the best writing that's happening or has happened over the past year by writers who live or have worked and lived in BC and Yukon. So I agree.
Yeah, one looks at the list objectively, and you can see how it represents this part of the world.
Yeah.
It represents the year that was so well. And, yeah, it's just a great way. And there are ways for people to get these books.
Yeah.
I think people should start with their local booksellers, their independent yeah. booksellers. And then you mentioned, there's four or five in this town that deliver.
Yeah.
The e-book thing, if people want to get that right away, they can do
yeah.
that.
Yeah, that's right.
And then the big chains, if they want to go that route, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Geist Magazine tweeted out, I think they made a Google map
uh-huh.
That demonstrated, to the best of their ability, all of the bookstores, not only in BC and Yukon, but also I think they tried to do it right across the country
mm-hmm.
in terms of which independents are available for phone calls or email orders, delivery, or whether that's by mail or whether they have a delivery person or whatever. So there is some self-organizing. It's really interesting to watch the self-organizing by people in the literary community, whether it's magazines, bookstores, people like us. There's a lot of hustle going on right now. People are really trying to adapt and change and get books into people's hands. It's really impressive.
So I was looking forward to the list of finalists and the
yeah.
gala. Obviously, I had a vacation planned in mid-April
yeah.
and arranged it so that I could come back for it. Now, so the dinner has been rescheduled. Doing that is one thing, but the process in terms of adjudicating the awards, that hasn't stopped, has it?
No, in fact, it's continuing right now. One of the big changes that we made to the adjudication process this year is that, unlike in the past, because you were a juror last year for us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know what that process looked like. And it was mostly just kind of a blind ballot with numbers, with scores tabulated, and then a winner is chosen based on the scoring. This year we did a similar situation like that just to create the shortlist. So we did not create an opportunity for the winner to be chosen through that balloting system. So we changed it because we felt that we needed to have the jurors speak to one another and discuss the shortlist so that they can come to a conclusion about which books are valuable. You know, they have the opportunity to explore the books a little more deeply and to maybe get into a debate and a discussion where they might be in a position to change one another's minds or to offer insight into books that they might not have been able to appreciate when they were reading them during the earlier adjudication process. So right now we will have a series of meetings with me as a moderator or facilitator where the judges will spend about an hour on Zoom, of course, having a conversation about the pros and cons, the greatness of all of the books. And then from that moment, the jurors will walk away from having that discussion, and they will then send in their ballot based on the five shortlisted books.
Right.
And a winner will be determined through that process. So that's where we're at right now. That's a new change, and we really felt like it was super valuable for the jurors to, you know, really have a critical discussion about the shortlist before any decision was made on who the winners might be.
And for people listening to us, you were kind enough back in December to come in.
Right.
When we weren't socially distancing ourselves. It's a long time ago, isn't it? And people can listen to that chat because I gave an overview of my experience, what that was like last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fascinating to hear how that process has changed, because I think I would have benefited as a juror. I mean, it's not that I didn't have discussions with my fellow jurors last year.
Yeah.
We did that via email. It adds something to the process in terms of deciding who gets a prize when there is a discussion like this.
Well, it's the same principle. I know, Joe, you and I have talked about this over the years and the conversations we've had, where the difference between having a podcast, for example, and just having a blog where you would write out your thoughts or maybe transcribe an interview for mm-hmm. people to read,
mm-hmm.
Is you can hear people's voice. Right? You can engage in a discussion that will lead you in places that you weren't anticipating. And I think that for me, as a former podcaster and who recognized when Books on the Radio was on, that it was the sound of the voices that made people connect, right? And so getting these jurors together and having them just discuss the books and the things that they loved about them, the things maybe they're a little bit critical of one book or another book or whatever, I think can really change people's minds. You might see some interesting discussion happen where maybe a juror looks at a book in a different light for the first time and spends a little bit more time with it and makes a different determination than they might have in the past. And I want to emphasize that these are just discussions. There isn't nobody's advocating for one thing or another. It's just more getting people to have a discussion about books. And, you know, like you read a ton. You have great discussions with people all the time about books and about what they're reading and what they're thinking. And you know that in your experience, I'm sure, that people have come along and talked to you about a book that you've read and changed your mind about it provoked you to take another look at it and see things that you might not have seen before, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to make sure that people are talking to the jurors, are talking to one another, sharing their ideas, and then coming back to us. Because I really, as a former juror myself in the 2011 Ethel Wilson jury, I remember that feeling of being able to communicate by email is one thing. But, yeah. Having a discussion about the books, to me, that's a potential game changer, and it's a far more human way of talking about books.
Indeed. Now, without betraying confidences in the integrity of the judging process, the sorts of people that are judging these prizes, yeah. How are they selected?
They are selected. They're all everybody who is a juror comes from the field of writing, publishing, literature, librarianship. They're associated with books in a professional way, in one way or another. And so names are put forward from the board of directors and from our own kind of contact. We gather a pool of, say, 50 or so people. We try and figure out good suggestions every year, new people, to sit on prizes for which they would have a particular expertise or a familiarity or some insight, right? So mm-hmm. Last year, you were on the Hubert Evans?
Yes, correct, yeah.
Right, so nonfiction, I think, I didn't assist in the compilation of those juries last year. But I think people looked at you, they looked at the contributions that you make in your own areas of interest and expertise, and I think the Hubert Evans Nonfiction Prize is a perfect spot for someone like yourself, because of how you operate and your interest in the type of people that you are in discussion with all the time. So we try and fit people in that way, right? We would never perhaps put somebody with expertise in nonfiction academia or like an archaeologist or something like that in the poetry section and ask them to adjudicate the Dorothy Livesey, right?
Yeah.
We would want, for the sake of the books and for the sake, again, of the integrity of the award, we would want poets or people who are directly adjacent to poetry and poetry publishing to be involved in that type of adjudication.
The other thing I noticed, unlike other awards, most awards are named after people, mm-hmm. but each award that the BC Yukon Book Prizes gives out is yeah. named after somebody, and I guess over the year or so yeah. that you've been the executive, you've gotten to know who these people are, right?
Yeah, to a greater or lesser degree. I've still got yeah. some reading to do for each one of them, I think, yeah.
It's fascinating to see the contributions of each of these people in yeah. these various fields, it's a great way to remember a lot of them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I look at it, and of course we added the Jim Diva
right,
prize for
right.
writing that provokes this year, which honors legendary BC bookseller, free speech advocate, and just all round agitator, and a guy who really uplifted mm-hmm. So many marginalized voices, and ran an incredible bookshop that's still around today. So that's the newest prize that we have added, I think, in recent memory. And you look at so many writers who are contributing today or have contributed over the past couple of decades, and I look at this stuff and I'm like, wow, we could have like 20 awards, mm-hmm. 20 prizes, and a science fiction prize, and where would you go with that? Who would you honor with that? As a historical snapshot, the prize names are amazing, and I think they remind people to go back and to read the work that came before them.
Right.
The giants on whose shoulders we stand. But I think also, there are so many other voices and writers and people who contribute to the community that you could add a significant number more prizes just to get to more people honored and in the conversation in that way,
So this was a year I noticed where there were at least two authors who were nominated more than one category.
Yeah.
Can you give us a sense, Sean, of how many books are submitted in each category? I remember for last year's Hubert Evans Prize, I can't remember the number now. It was over 50.
Yeah.
And I think it was
probably
less
closer
than,
to 65.
Yeah, less than 80 maybe. I can't remember now. So in each category, are the numbers usually the same?
They can be. You know, it's different for every category. And, of course, the size of each book is different per category.
Right.
The nonfiction section, you know, you're usually going to get each book is at least going to be 350 pages sometimes. You know, some of those books are up to 500-600 pages, depending on what they are. Very, very rare for a book of poetry to clock in at that length. So there's not only, like, the number of books, mm-hmm. but also, like, the volume, right? And so, so I think that, you know, fiction and nonfiction tend to be the big ones.
Right.
And you're going to get like 60 some odd books in there, and it's up to the juror to be able to determine, you know, you do that first pass through the stack, right?
Right,
you're
right.
Like, okay, well, you know, this one's really, I really want to get into this. This one's going to take a little bit of time. This one I can get to right away. Every juror is going to have a different sense of how they manage that. But, you know, some, I think, like, some of the prizes get as many as maybe 40, others tip a little higher towards 60, 65,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it really goes any lower or any higher than that. That's kind of the sweet spot for each area, and quite frankly, we're hoping to grow it.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like there are some publishers out there who we haven't alerted yet, or we haven't crossed their field of vision in terms of them recognizing that books that they've published are eligible and they should get them to us. So, you know, I don't think it's going to double anytime soon, but that's the threshold, high and low.
And the books are submitted, so it's not like a juror can say, oh, I want to nominate this book that hasn't been submitted for this particular category, right?
Yeah, no, that's not how it works. Yeah, so publishers or the authors themselves can submit. But there is a criteria for each publisher. Like if you submit a book for adjudication, you pay us $30 per title.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also kind of agree at that point that if the book is shortlisted, then there's you got to help us out with some marketing and promotion support. And if your book wins, then that happens again. Of course, this year, you know, it's a year of unique things occurring.
Yeah.
We have Rhea Tregobov's book, which is on the Ethel Wilson shortlist, and it was published by Coteau out of Regina. And, of course, the sad news about that story is that Coteau, shut down operations, I guess, about a month or so ago.
Uh-huh.
So that creates a bit of a problem, but it's not something that we're concerned about because we'll support that book and make sure that everything happens for all the books in all the categories, no matter what.
Now, I mentioned that the gala has obviously moved from late April to mid September.
Yeah.
Sheila Rogers is still the host, right?
That is correct. Yep.
She was so great last year.
Yeah. She is great. Yeah. All the time.
Yeah. And in terms of the other events, because there are events prior to the gala.
Mm-hmm.
There are no dates yet, but those we can expect those around the time of the gala, right?
Yeah, there'll be the soiree, which is kind of like a public gathering that'll happen at Book Warehouse on West Broadway, probably a couple of weeks before the gala itself.
Mm-hmm.
Gives a chance for the public to mingle, buy some books, meet some authors, just kind of celebrate the shortlist and get together. Now, of course, given social distancing and the current situation and conflicting timelines, who knows what that will look like when the time comes. But as soon as we're able to confirm that stuff, we will. The other things, of course, that happen are the author tours, where we have traditionally sent writers out into the interior of north, to schools and libraries and public events. And obviously that's changed. And that is to be determined. And I think one of the things that we're struggling with, or we're adapting to, I shouldn't say we're struggling with it, we're adapting to it, is how do we continue to do our work? How do we continue to engage with the community, communities, remote communities especially? How do we get books into people's hands? How do we get authors in front of young people to help inspire them and coach them and maybe, you know, ignite the fire that helps them to become a writer themselves one day? And so we're working on that. We're working on the ideas of, you know, remote, digital, virtual tours, of creating sort of interactive webinars where an author might be able to, through the power of Zoom or Skype or whatever, might be able to kind of virtually appear in classrooms and have interactions and discussions with teachers and students. We're working on that. You know, we have to. I think that what we're seeing right now with COVID-19 and the way that it's affected society at large is everybody has to adapt. The normality of things has changed. We don't know what it's going to look like. We're super hopeful that it means that we can get back on the road and back into communities, but we can't sit around waiting for that to happen and not be prepared for the fact that that really the future of how we're going to operate as an organization is virtual.
Yeah.
We don't know yet. We're hopeful. Obviously, everyone's hopeful that we can get back out there and have a gala, get together for the soiree, go see a hockey game, go to the cafe, meet your friends on the street, whatever. But we're working on adapting to what these new realities are going to be, and the job remains the same, right? Celebrate great writing and great publishing in BC and Yukon, get books into libraries, get books into people's hands, raise awareness about the authors and the work that they're doing. And you know what, I think another thing, not to make this the longest answer that you've ever had, but that I think that what we're going to do and what you're going to see more of is you're going to see more collaboration between organizations to support one another and find ways to, quite simply collaborate.
Yeah.
You know, I know that we're having discussions with leaders in the literary communities in BC and Yukon right now. And we're talking about how we're going to get through this. So the community really is coming together, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
And I tweeted this a couple weeks ago, and it bears repeating. If there are any authors out there, any genre, obviously, that want to talk about their books, I'm very happy and willing to make space on the program to arrange a phone interview. To talk about your work, and so we can start with some of these nominees or the finalists for these book prizes. If any of them listening want a a good 20, half an hour to chat, just email me and we'll get it done. And I think that's important because these are very special books that are finalists, and there are books on here that I pay attention to the book business. There are books on here that I missed, obviously, in the last year or so.
Yeah. Well, you can't get them all, Joe. And that is a super generous offer, right? I think what I'll do, and we can talk about this offline, but I think what I'll do, we have our own podcast that's run by Megan Cole and some friends up in Powell River where we're going to be working on the same thing. But what I'll do is I'll make sure that the authors and the publishers know from us. I'll send out an email to everybody and let them know how to get in touch with you, and I'm sure you'll get some traction there for sure.
Now I noticed the Lieutenant Governor's Award for Literary Excellence nominations for that are still open, right?
Yeah, we extended it and we may extend it again. The intention was that that award, which we're welcoming back after a 2-year hiatus this year, was going to be presented by Her Honor at BC Book Day in May, in early May.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, all of those plans were made before all plans were scuttled.
Right.
And so we are now in a situation where we're determining when that announcement will happen. We pushed the date back a little bit, and I know the deadline was, I think, tomorrow initially or today. And, I don't know whether you felt this way, Joe, but I know that pretty much everybody in the industry, when the COVID news came down and the reality of the changes and the shutdowns and the social distancing and all of that really happened, it took 10 days to 2 weeks for everybody in the industry to wrap their head around that.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, like, not just, like, there were people who were just in shock, and I think, yeah, I've heard people describe the sense of anxiety and fear and uncertainty as a type of grieving that, mm-hmm. as a society, we're going through right now. And so we couldn't continue to have the deadline at that spot because people had other things to do.
Right.
Those past couple of weeks, and so we extended it in order to give people some time to recalibrate, put it back on their radar, and get those nominations in. So yes, it is at least until the 17th of this month, and we may extend it again depending on some of the feedback I get from publishers and other people in terms of gathering the materials that they need to submit. And I think that's totally fair. We're under extraordinary circumstances. I know that that Her Honor and her office, the people who she works with and work for her, are the great people, and they're totally on board with whatever it takes to make sure we get the best results. And by the best result is the jury has all the materials that they need.
Right, right. Yeah. You've had a lot of work to do. I mean, you mentioned, you know, after the initial, realizing where we are in the world today. You've had work in terms of moving the gala and the sword and replanning everything. You have had a chance to get to read a lot of these books. Would you just you don't even have to go into specifics as to certain books and certain authors, but I mean it really does reflect this part of the world so well, doesn't it? This list of finalists.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I mean, I am professionally agnostic. about all of these books. I do get to see them when they come in. I kind of hold myself to not really getting into them until after we've had these adjudications. There's lots to read, so I tend to wait a little while. But I think I look at it, and I am so happy about the diversity of books, the diversity of authors. The range that we have in every shortlist is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it, and so much of it could only be written out here on the coast. And there's, like, not only because of the way some of these books honor, you know, the beauty and the natural awesomeness of BC and Yukon, but there's also, like, this element that runs through a lot of these books of protest and just kind of like a rebellious attitude that I really, really appreciate seeing, you know?
Yeah, and you realize as well, just looking at the names of the publishers, the diversity there in terms of big and small houses, medium-sized houses. Not just in this part of the world, but across the country that publish books that are of interest to British Columbians and people from the Yukon.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that you can't deny the quality of writing and publishing, illustrators, all of the creators, all the people who are doing the work to get these books out into the world from BC and Yukon. Easily some of the best in the country, which basically means they're some of the best in the world. And sure, there are publishers who are obviously publishing folks who live here, but, you know, those publishers are in Toronto or Montreal or other parts of the country or even of the world. But it's the quality of the creators who are living and working here that is the determination for eligibility. And it's awesome to see these lists. I agree.
And people can get in touch with you on Twitter, at Sean Cranberry is your handle.
Yep.
And they should visit the website, bcyukonbookprizes.com, for the list of finalists as well as any updates between now and the fall, right?
That is correct.
I appreciate your time today. It's nice to chat, and hopefully we get to do this again in person one day.
Yeah, soon. Absolutely, Joe.
Are you missing?
For taking the time.
You're very welcome. Are you missing baseball, Sean?
Oh, you know I'm missing baseball. I mean, the situation is like this. There may or may not be a baseball season this year, which would be weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, my brother and my brother-in-law, we were talking the other day, and they're like, Sean, you got to get a PlayStation 4 so we can play online baseball against each other across the country. And I was like, all right, okay, that's what it's going to be. We have to make our own baseball. That's just the way it's going to be.
You know, I was looking at the MLB YouTube page. Because, you know, I've been, you know, looking for things to watch, obviously, since the last few days. And they posted a thing of these people playing the whatever it is, 2020 MLB or whatever the name of the game
MLB
is.
20, yeah.
And it took me a minute or so to figure out that it was a game because, you know, I thought it was, you know, a cartoon, you know, like a movie or something, you know.
Yeah.
But people can get really into it, and I can see how fun it is, you know.
Yeah.
Not that I'm going to be playing video games anytime soon.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, the only thing I can think of is how many times I'm, as a pitcher in that video game, I'm going to hit the batter of my brother just to piss off. You know?
So this vacation I had in April was for Chicago, and so there are obviously two teams there that are worth seeing. And then I thought, well, I want to hit off as many of these stadiums as I possibly could. So I arranged for a trip to Milwaukee for the day to see the Brewers. But unfortunately now I don't know where you know, I've heard things that all this stuff, we're going to get back to normal, say, in July.
Sure.
Yeah. I figure the next time I can possibly go is while there's still baseball would be, say, September.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that they're going to extend the season into, say, November, are they?
Well, that's I think they gotta. I think that it's, you know, baseball is a weather-dependent sport unless you have a dome, of course.
Yeah.
And I am a big fan of watching baseball in weird weather. I just think it's one of those the natural challenges that athletes have to adapt to, and I think it makes the game more interesting. So if they're playing baseball, I don't know whether the Brewers have a dome. They probably do. But, you know, if they're playing baseball in November when it's like zero in an open-air stadium, I think that would be awesome. I'd love to watch that.
I mean, they do that in the NFL, right? So, I mean, I appreciate your time. Thanks again, Sean.
Yeah, Joe, great talking to you. Have a good one.
The website for more is bcyukonbookprizes.com. At Sean Cranberry is his Twitter handle. Sean Cranberry, the executive director of the BC and Yukon Book Prizes, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.